The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Welcome to Movie Love, the Observer's film podcast. I'm Jason Solomon. Well, it began as Movie Love in January 2007, but it finishes as, well, you know. Welcome back to the very last Film Weekly with me, Jason Solomons. As is the way in the media world, projects get the green light, and sadly, the red light too. So all good things must come to an end, and Film Weekly has certainly been a good thing. Sam Brooks and I will be reviewing some of this week's releases, including the new Aardman feature, Pirate in an Adventure with Scientists, Werner Herzog's Into the Abyss, and the censored Iranian filmmaker Jafar Panahi turns adversity into opportunity with This Is Not a Film. This is not a podcast. It's the very last Film Weekly. Now, usually on Film Weekly, I introduce my sparring partner, Zan Brooks, with a well-meaning and warm jibe. But for all his help over the last few years, I welcome Zan with warm and open arms. How nice it has been sharing this slot with you over the last three or four years.
I feel that I've had to work for your respect all these years, and only now do I finally get it.
You know,
and
that is the
by
the
God, it's
irony.
Been a while.
but you have deserved it. You've put up with it very well, especially the jibes. We shall look for the final time at Pirates! An Adventure with Scientists! We should look at Werner Herzog's Into the Abyss. We'll look at Jafar Panahi's This Is Not a Film as well. You can tell me about Mirror Mirror, one of the first blockbusters of the season, and I shall tell you about Tiny Furniture as well. So we'll begin, however, with Pirates! An Adventure with Scientists! I put in those little exclamation marks because I really believe that one should never have exclamation marks, particularly in film titles. They seem to be knowing here where they would be. They're Aardman, aren't they?
Sweet Neptune on a bike!
Oh, don't mind Mr. Bobo. Just an old project of mine.
Project?
Yeah, I had this theory. I thought that if you took a monkey, gave him a monocle and covered up his gigantic unsightly arse, then he would cease to be a monkey and become more of a man-pansee, if you will.
Bold theory.
I don't like the monkey.
That's Aardman there with The Pirates, which features the voice of Hugh Grant as the bumbling pirate captain, who winds up kidnapping the young Charles Darwin, voiced by David Tennant, who points out that the pirate's parrot is actually the last surviving dodo. Which kicks off an adventure in which the pirates go to present the dodo to a psychotic Queen Victoria back in London.
Who hates pirates.
Who hates pretty much everything, I think.
She's Imelda Staunton.
Imelda Staunton. A kind of rip-roaring performance from her.
Yeah. Everyone's a bit rip-roaring in this one, aren't they? Are they kind of off the hook? Martin Freeman's in there.
Martin Freeman, Brendan Gleeson is in there. Selma Hayek is in there.
Oh, yeah, she's a kind of sexy pirate.
Well, what else is she going to be? She's not going to be the dodo, is she?
She could be. There's also Jeremy Piven from Entourage in there.
He's in there too. So they've kind of shrewdly got a few American stars in there as well. For all that, though, it's typically English in the great Aardman tradition. And it's a great tradition that I've somehow managed to avoid. Yeah. I've always struggled a little bit with
Aardman. You've never seen what, like, Trousers?
I kind of like them up to a point, but it's that kind of the epitome of Middle England in that it's sort of whimsical. There's a sort of sense of eccentricity to them.
What was it, Chicken Run?
I didn't like that. Underlying conservatism. And although I find them kind of gentle and warm and jolly, as with all epitomes of Middle England, I'm always slightly worried that they're going to suddenly turn around and, I don't know, say that we should bring back caning or stamp down on immigrants because they're stealing our jobs. And there's always that slight suspicion with them, and which is possibly more my prejudice than anything.
Yeah, it might be something that you're more,
I think, I'm in a minority
about
of one. I think that they're a national
institution. What was the other one with Ralph Fiennes and Hilliard Carter? He was on the Curse lawn.
Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I didn't think that was very funny.
That was a bit boring.
But this is not, we must stress, this is not claymation in that normal way, is it? It's
claymation 2.0, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's state of the art claymation.
So it's done by computer
3D.
And look in 3D, and it looks like claymation, but it isn't, is it?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
The last one they did was Arthur Christmas, which was
liked,
quite successful,
actually.
And I liked as well. But that was just a straight animation.
Yeah, that was.
But this one is actually, they've bothered to make animation look like claymation. What's the
it's
point
a
of that?
Very weird thing, isn't it? It's like their version of mocap.
Yeah,
it's that kind of mocap animation. And I think it works fine. It works better than mocap does.
Yeah. It looks
and
all right.
I quite enjoyed this.
Yeah. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny. And it's got loving attention to detail. And I think that it had a bit more kind of wildness and abrasiveness than we're used to with them, which played well with me.
Yeah, I mean, it had that kind of fun adventure of, like, around the world in 80 days, yeah. The kind of Jules Verne presented to the site, and the useless pirate, which Hugh Grant was quite good. It was probably the best thing Hugh Grant's done for years, actually.
Yes, it will be, possibly ever.
Yeah, I mean, since Four
Morris.
Weddings. It's very like Four Weddings or Morris, yeah.
It's got Chimpanzee Butler in there, Mr.
Yeah,
Bobo,
doing
which
gags,
is always
doing
good.
Gags.
A lot of jokes about roast ham. And again, I guess they're known for their sort of painstaking attention to detail, and that's in full force here, to the extent that you almost want to watch it again to notice all the little sight gags.
Yeah, they're kind of loving, aren't they? There's like a whale that kind of crashes into the pirate's lair, and then when they kind of come out again, there's the whale still kind of there.
Yeah,
and then he just like winks his eye to sort of show his eye, and that's those are well told gags. They're quite good at this kind of pacing now.
They are. They've jettisoned just the straight, gentle whimsy, and are going for more of a full-on sort of cinematic blockbuster assault, without quite shelving all the little grace notes and all the sort of gentle vein of humour that runs through it all.
Yeah.
So I'm gradually being won over to Aardman. This is sort of doing it. And I've always felt like incredibly lonely not liking them when everybody... You know, they're the great sacred cow of British
cinema.
Well,
they were always an Oscar bet as well. And when someone... Didn't they steal them once on the way to the Oscars? Didn't someone get... Wallace and Gromit went missing in a New York cab or something? Sounds like
something
the premise
like
to a
that.
Movie.
And didn't they have, like, big bow ties on or something?
Yeah,
on you when they collected the problem I always have with it is that I imagine Aardman offices in Bristol has a sign saying you don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps.
Yeah.
And I've always just found that I'm slightly resistant
well,
to that.
Well, Zan, because of all your help over the last few years with this show, I have a... Here, I have a matching underwear and tie set full of Aardman characters.
Does the
that
tie
I'd like
spin
to
around?
Yes, it does,
brilliant.
Absolutely. It's okay. Got Wallace and Gromit on each wing, and the socks
I shall parade around King's Cross in that ensemble and get my head kicked in by Alkies, by great British Alkies.
Great British Aardman supporting Alkies. That's Pirates, which we quite liked, actually. We're just kind of venting our fury on the poor.
Yeah,
we're
not going to be able to do it much more, so let's vent.
Let's vent. A change of pace now as we look at the latest Werner Herzog documentary, Into the Abyss, comes while he's on a great run of form, stretching back to Grizzly Man, Encounters at the End of the World, and of course the amazing Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Here he travels to Texas to face up various death row inmates as they face the executioner and several lifers as they do time for brutal triple murders. Here he is, facing off and peering deep into the soul of Jason Birkin.
So, best case scenario, if you are granted parole in 2041, how old would you be then? Does 60. This ever occur to you, or do you want to think about it?
I'll be 59, 60. I was 19. I have to do 40 years from 19, which would be 59
yes.
years old. Long time.
Now, when Herzog was on the show, Zan, about a year ago, talking about Cave of Forgotten Dreams, he said he was in the middle of being in Texas and staring into the abyss and interviewing these people who were facing the death penalty on death row. And I thought, my God, the last person I want to see before I die is Werner Herzog. But I thought it was going to make for a terrific documentary.
Yeah, it's interesting that he doesn't actually appear in this film. He's had a sort of nice little sideline lately where he's the slightly sort of bumbling Inspector Clouseau stroke Sherlock Holmes star of his own documentary.
Yeah, kind of
and
Louis Theroux style.
Here.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously a aesthetic choice that he's made, that the subject matter has to be centre stage. So you only hear him, his voice.
Yeah, we hear his voice a lot.
You hear his voice a lot, and it's lends a slight sort of comical vibe to it because he's got the very, you know, iconoclastic delivery.
You're going to do Werner Herzog then?
I'm not going to do Werner Herzog at all. Nobody can do Werner Herzog.
Nobody can.
And so he does seem like this sort of officious, curious, slightly perplexed god questioning these people.
Which is interesting because the premise of the film is about the questioning and mercifulness of God himself. Why is this happening? That's it. The prologue starts with him. Why does God allow human execution?
That's very good, Jason. Superb. I thought he was here in the room again. Yes, it is. And Herzog is very upfront about the fact that he doesn't agree with the death penalty at the start. But having said that, this isn't a Michael Moore-style attack on the death penalty. Herzog doesn't really go down that route. He's not kind of interested in those kind of easy answers. He's interested in the complexities of human nature, the absurdity of the system, and I guess the extremes of human nature as well. And this certainly shows that. It shows the kind of the depths that people can sink to, but then the way that people can be kind of ennobled by that as well.
That's what I thought Into the Abyss was going to do. And that's what I felt it was trying
it
to
was,
do.
Yeah, there are problems with it in that it sets itself up as a kind of In Cold Blood style forensic inquiry into this crime. And it's not that at all. And I sometimes wish that there was a bit more rigour in terms of getting people to talk about the actual crime.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that while he's doing all the existential stuff that you mentioned there, like peering into the soul of man and why we take an eye for an eye, and there's something biblical about the death penalty, should it exist, the moral questions of it, and yet he seems kind of earthbound by the very facts of this case, that he needs to explain this case so that we can make up our mind whether this Michael Perry or Jason Burkett deserved the death penalty or not. So I think that the actual kind of nitty-gritty of law gets in the way of his kind of rather kind of more grander standing moralizing.
I think that's fair enough. It's almost that the issue is so vast and so murky that he loses his way a little bit, and that's sort of fine, and that he makes almost a bonus of that, of this is such a huge thing to kind of find a way through. But at the same time, I was wishing for a bit more bite sometimes, and particularly the character of Michael Perry, who is the one facing execution, claims he's innocent, claims he's a Christian, and Herzog doesn't really get much out of him. And that, I felt, was a kind of lacuna at the film's centre.
Yeah, me too. I sort of felt rather disappointing, considering that Grizzly Man and Encounters at the End of the World had all stared into the existential. I mean, there's the famous end of Encounters at the End of the World, where he kind of looks at the penguin and wonders, where's this penguin
he's
going?
Yeah, he's walking to nothing.
And really, he kind of takes that kind of strange anthropomorphic kind of philosophy that he does. And at the beginning of this film, he kind of faces off the pastor and sort of says, ah, and tell me about the squirrels that you meet on the golf
course. Yes, there's that, yeah, there's that. And there's also very moving interviews in there with the father of Jason Burkett, who has been a prisoner himself, and the daughter stroke sister of the murder victims, both of whom come out of it very, very well. So the interviews around the side, I thought, were great. But if you're going into the abyss to meet the killer, who is then himself about to be killed, and all of the ruin that surrounds that, you want more of a sense of who this man is.
Indeed, and I felt that, because it happens, the death happens, and they talk about what happened in the death room, and there's no footage of that. There's no, almost a reconstruction of that would have been more chilling. I'd like to have seen how man systematically kills man, I really think he missed
everything. I think he probably thought that would be too crass.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree that it probably needed that. We get shots of the red Camaro that was the cause of the crime.
Yeah.
But again, that's a blank.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's saying, this is a blank, this is a senseless crime. There is no answers to be drawn from this. It's just things that people do, which is fine as a stance. But in terms of a satisfying narrative, it leaves you trailing a little bit.
And it made you think that the law was not enough
not to
cope with this. But also, there's concurrently, I think there's stuff on Channel 4, on Film 4, going on. There's extra material from Werner's time on death row. And maybe he did get lost in the sort of abyss of human kind of human darkness.
Possibly. I guess maybe we shall never know. I always think with Herzog, he's given you the film that he wants to give you. It's not a case of, I think he would completely own this and say every choice he would be able to justify.
Mm.
But it's not one of his great documentaries.
No.
Though it is fascinating in fits and starts.
Into the Abyss by Werner Herzog. Another documentary by a world-acclaimed filmmaker now, Jaffer Panahi, who is currently under house arrest in Tehran. He's the author of films such as Offside and Crimson Gold. Here, his latest film is not a film. This Is Not a Film was smuggled out of Tehran in a cake and presented to the Cannes Film Festival, made behind closed doors. So here he is, Jaffer Panahi, in his flat in Tehran. Is it a film?
Yeah, it's a film. I don't want to get him into any more trouble than he's in now. but it's clearly a film. Jaffa Panahi was convicted of, quote, making propaganda against the system. He's been a supporter of the Green Uprising that followed the disputed elections in Iran. He's an enemy of the system. He faces 6 years in jail, a sentence that could begin at any time. And in the meantime, he's banned from giving interviews, leaving the country, writing scripts and directing films for 20 years.
I'm trying to impose a similar one on Michael Bay at the moment and getting support. But
there's so many, isn't there? There are so many, and I don't think Jaffa Panahi is deserving, really. And this is a film about using the difficulty, I guess, and about how you find a way. It's made in collaboration with a documentary filmmaker called Mojtaba Mertenbas.
Someone who's worked with Mac Malbath and Kira Starmer.
Yeah, who visits Panahi at his Tehran apartment, films him, and ingeniously Panahi starts reciting the film that he would have made if he had been allowed to make the film. So he's reading dialogue from the script. He's basically recreating the set on his sort of Persian rug in his living room
with tape.
Yeah, which raises a lot of questions and sometimes despairing questions, where at one stage he says, if you can tell a film, why make a film? But it's also liberating, and there are points where he shows clips from his old films where the location kind of thwarted what he wanted to do and he had to work around that. The child actress in his film Mirror suddenly refuses to act anymore and wants to get off the bus and abandon
it's
the set.
It's not a film I'd seen nor a scene.
And it made me want to see it. I've never seen it yet.
Great. This girl is extraordinary. Just have a tantrum.
And if you're a filmmaker working in Iran at the moment, then all you're doing is working around these impossible constraints. So he's probably more practiced at it than, say, Michael Bay would be. And it's an ingenious film, and it's a sad film because he's basically the exile. He's padding around his apartment. He can't go out.
Yeah, but
he's lonely.
And yet he's kind of...
And yet he's amused by the absurdity of it, and he's passionate about things, and he has incredible dignity. And just the creative will, the message that you take from this film is that you're an artist no matter what people tell you you are. You'll find a way. You'll find a way to make something.
Mm. And I mean, he smuggled it out of Tehran in a cake, I mentioned. In a memory stick?
Yeah, in a memory stick concealed in a cake that went to the Cannes Film Festival.
Ingenious.
Absolutely ingenious.
It's like,
you know, Arsène Lupin, isn't it? it's great. And he's not your obvious sort of revolutionary firebrand. You know, he's a middle-class, middle-aged guy. He's not...
What's crucial about this film, the establishing bits of the film, just him sort of making his tea in the morning and having his toast. And
he's got a pet iguana, crawls over, and there's kind of weird little walk-on roles. You know, the sense that the world kind of creeping into this apartment in the form of a neighbour's yapping dog, or at the end, in a great charged scene where there's a moonlighting art student who's working as the custodian in the block of flats who's collecting the rubbish, and Panahi accompanies him out to the elevator and they're going up and down and he's quizzing this guy and the guy's quizzing him. And there's a point where you think, is this guy actually from the government? Because Panahi is saying, how do you know me? How do you know so much about me? And there's this tension there. And then this sort of weird breakthrough that you realise that he's not. And actually, maybe this is the subject of his film. He wants to make a film about an art student in Tehran. That was the film that he wanted to make that they won't let him make. And here he's almost found his subject, again, by accident, in a sort of strange, circuitous way.
And then he comes out of the building a bit, and the student says, go back in.
Yeah, go back in, you can't come out. And there's fireworks going on, it's Iranian New Year's Eve.
It's a fascinating document,
I thought this
isn't
was
it?
Absolutely tremendous. This was great. It's moving, it's funny, and it's a
and yeah, it's
a
shot
tribute.
On an iPhone and a video camera. Yeah. I mean,
let's not oversell it.
It's not blockbuster furniture that you might expect on a Friday night
not.
Movie.
But my prejudice going into this was I thought this is going to be just a little doodle, a kind of an offcut that well done for him for getting something out of Iran. Mm. But it's actually a proper piece of work.
Do you think he edited it? Do you think it's just, you know, he managed to shoot what he shot and it got all put together and it went out, or did he spend some time, you know, putting it all together and making it a subtle satire? Because his other films aren't The Circle, for example. They're quite strong satires.
Yeah,
this is as subtle as those are in its satire of Iranian society.
I don't know. I mean, it's a film that obviously prompts a lot of questions over the making of it. How much involvement did he actually have? And I guess he won't be able to tell us, and probably shouldn't tell us. I'm sure he gave a strong advice on creative decisions, put it that way. But he's very careful to to at least act the part of the passive man in the flat, the dangling man who's waiting for his fate to be kind of delivered to him.
An extraordinary story told by Jaffa Panahi about himself, really. It may be 20 years before we see another film by him, unless he's...
I almost can't countenance that.
Other baked goods. They should be monitoring those apple strudels coming out of his apartment very carefully next time.
The truth is, I didn't just come here to dance tonight. I need your help.
Anything. I'm at your disposal.
It's the Queen. Ever since my father died, she's terrorized the people and ruined the land. And I would hope that a good-hearted prince like yourself would. I have to go.
Zan, you've seen a blockbuster this week. We'll move from the Tehran apartment of Jaffa Panahi to the rather bigger terrain of Julia Roberts in Mirror, Mirror. What's this about?
Mirror, Mirror is a supposedly revisionist Snow White tale that's pitched squarely at the tweeny market, supposedly from the point of view of the Evil Queen, but actually kind of not. It dispenses with that conceit quite early.
Julia Roberts, the Evil Queen.
Julia Roberts is the Evil Queen who plays as a sort of aging diva and has a kind of fun with it that is infectious for a little while, but then that one note sort of gets a bit wearing. Snow White is played by Lily Collins, the daughter of Phil Collins, who I think is being marketed as kind of bargain bin Audrey Hepburn in this. The prince is Arnie Hammer, who is so good in The Social Network and rather less good here.
He was in Leonardo DiCaprio thing, the biopic opposite Leonardo DiCaprio.
He was, yeah. J. Edgar. Mm. Yeah, he's as bad in this as he was in...
really, as much makeup?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Who wants to see a film with Arnie Hammer and Lily Collins in it?
Well, the tweenies, I think.
Who is Lily Collins? I mean, apart from the daughter of Phil Collins.
Daughter of Phil, that's all you need to know.
That's not really a thing.
Well,
to trumpet, is it?
She's made it work for her, hasn't she? She's, I guess, not bad, but there's a certain sort of blandness. I
mean, does she look like Phil
Collins?
Listen to Phil's
music, it's the acting.
Can she feel it coming in the air tonight?
She can feel it coming. There's a bit of Sussudio in there.
Right.
And also, you have that weird thing that there's a point where the Evil Queen is raising taxes and squeezing people in the country and they can't pay their taxes. And I thought, yeah, Phil would respond to this
because really,
he didn't write the
Geneva,
taxes.
Didn't he? Yeah.
So maybe he had a hand in the script. You've got Seven Dwarfs, which are, you know, they're basically kind of grungy brigands like the ones out of Time Bandits.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not bad. They're kind of okay.
Are they called Grumpy Dopey and all that?
No, they're not. People,
they're not allowed
names.
To be called that now.
No,
I think there's another one coming up, Snow White and Huntsman, coming up soon, and they're not called
what they
Grumpy
called
Dopey. I don't know, Fred, Ginger and Jaffa.
I like the dwarfs. I could have done a bit more of the dwarfs, a bit less of Lily.
Didn't you get some dwarfs when you went to see it?
Yes, I did.
Fun in the foyer with dwarves.
Fun in the foyer. Sunday, the perils of the Sunday morning screening, where we had a band of cavorting dwarves to usher us in, which is, you know, very tasteful and fun for all concerned.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I'm not feeling that. That's entertainment.
It was certainly novel. You know, we didn't get that at the Jaffa Panahi, did we?
No, that's true. Didn't even get cakes with memory sticks. What's the world coming to?
But this is the genius of film marketing. We also, the screening was introduced by a TV presenter who I'm ashamed to admit that I never heard of, who told us to tell all our friends how much we liked it. And if we saw a camera, to put our face in front of it and tell that camera how much we liked it.
I got told.
I haven't seen the camera yet. But
I got told to do that after The Hunger Games.
Oh, did you?
If I saw a camera, put my face in front of it. And I'm like, you're talking to me here. If I see a camera, I put my face in front of it.
Do.
No matter what it is,
you
speed
do.
Camera.
You push people out of the way
camera.
To get there.
Exactly. What are they talking to here?
Can you come and move the couch on the left, like 1 inch towards the window?
Hey, Candace.
Hey, Aura. Some boxes came for you, so put them in your bedroom.
Not your bedroom.
Thank you. I think you're being mean.
I think you're being oversensitive.
I just got off a plane for Ohio. I'm in a postgraduate delirium.
I think you sound like you're in the epilogue to Felicity.
The guy that I thought I was going to marry just moved to Colorado. Cut me some slack.
You were not going to marry him. He's like a little speck of granola on a bowl of homemade yogurt.
Zan, I've seen Tiny Furniture as well. A lot of fuss made this. It won at South by Southwest, so I thought, oh, that's cool. Lena Dunham appears to be a name to watch. She's the writer-director of this film. She's got an HBO series in the pipeline called Girls, which aims to look at the perils of New York 20-somethings, much in the way that Seinfeld did.
They were 30-somethings,
so they're a bit
the
younger
market.
Than that. So she's come back from Ohio University. How was Ontario, says her neighbour to her, showing you how much New York cares about their neighbours. And then she tries to get a job and she can't. She lives in her mum's apartment. She's played, the mum is played by Lena Dunham's real mum. The sister is played by Lena Dunham's real sister. Her best friend from childhood is played by her best friend from childhood. It's a very kind of autobiographical film. It's also kind of whiny in a New York angsty kind of way.
You don't like that, do you?
Not normally. And it's kind of got a bit of mumblecore
in it. You don't like that.
I don't really like that either. That said, I didn't mind this one. It's kind of more scripted and witty than most of them. There are jokes there that are told. It was a bit like an extended episode of Seinfeld, but not as polished in its unpolished
extended
way.
Extended episode of Seinfeld sounds like the best thing in the world for
me. I would definitely watch that. It's got a little bit of the mumblecore in it as well, which I like less. But it could be okay. It was kind of very New York-y, this. It was a Tribeca Lofts art scene. Kind of quite enjoyed it, but I did have a mind to kind of reach into the screen and smack people around the face quite often. Tiny furniture, the little things that make us happy here on Film Weekly. So, Zan, that brings us to a close of our review sections.
Is this it?
It's been real.
It's been real. It's been surreal at times.
Do you know what your favourite film was over the last 4 years that we reviewed on here?
My brain just jettisons everything. What have we just been talking about? Mirror, maybe.
That might be your favourite.
That may be.
But we went to festivals, being at Cannes, at Venice. I mean, I'm thinking of you being very passionate about things like... I don't know. You're not passionate about anything. Very passionate about Von Trier occasionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having interviewed Charlotte Gainsbourg, coming back, kind of a panting dog of a man who couldn't believe that he'd been at the Hotel du Cap and interviewing Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Yeah, and watching Antichrist, which I still
all at the same time.
I still hold up as one of the great films of recent years, and I know that you don't. I've enjoyed my annual victory in the Oscar predictions.
I'll
be sad not to.
I'm still sore about you, Nick, getting that Japanese film.
Departures.
No, you still haven't even seen it.
I did see it eventually, and I probably wouldn't have voted for it.
No, exactly. You got that one.
Our end of the year top tens, I've enjoyed doing.
We got closer and closer. I think when we first started,
we were almost in lockstep.
And by the end,
we
were together like female flatmates who kind of menstrual cycles
exactly.
come together.
Or owners who start to look like their dogs.
Yes.
And talking of that, I mean, what I won't miss is playing the doofus in here while you run effortless rings around me. It's been a constant humiliation.
Yeah, well, I shall look for another willing and stupid sidekick from somewhere else.
I feel like the Hank Kingsley of the Film Weekly podcast.
That's on the Larry Sanders.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, yes. TV reference too far almost. I can all I can do is thank you very much for your company. I've enjoyed it wherever it's been, Cannes, Venice, Edinburgh, or here in good old King's Cross. Zan Brooks, thank you very much. For more of Zan Brooks, he shall continue, that's for sure, on guardian.co.uk/film.
Thank you, Jason.
It has indeed been a blast. I'd like to thank my original producer on Movie Love, as it was, Paul Noble, now at Monocle, and as well as all of the Guardian audio team who have helped out over the years, the great Zan Brooks, of course, and my producer, Jason Phipps. The beauty of podcasts, of course, is that even when they're canned, they live on online, of course. So the last 330 episodes of content that we've created for your listening pleasure is still online. Should you feel the need to delve back into the archive, it's gone. It's like going to film school for free. The easiest way is to go to guardian.co.uk/filmweekly. Hopefully this won't be the last you hear from me. To keep up with all that I'm doing in the film world, follow my Twitter account @JasonCritic for what I do next. Until then, from my producer on Film Weekly, the trusty Jason Phipps, and from me, Jason Solomons, for the very last time, it's goodbye. And remember, if you want to hear the biggest interviews with the biggest stars, just delve into that archive. There, you can hear from Mark Ruffalo, Bruce Robinson, Paddy Considine and Olivia Colman, Robin Williams, Francis Ford Coppola, Spike Lee, Penelope Cruz, Audrey Tautou, Lord Attenborough, Jerry Seinfeld, Denzel Washington, Juliette Binoche,
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.